15,000 dresses. Now maybe the poet's wife had 14,000, but not 15,000. She wasn't the queen of Russia, but she was the poet's wife. She says, "Munish, this is the most beautiful dress I own." And the daughters come out, "Munish, the dresses are beautiful." And the boys come out with their suits. "Munish, look at the suits. They fit so nicely. Thank you very much. We're going to have a nice time by the birthday party. Daddy's birthday." And the servants' uniforms and the officers. And Kinnaloch, not only Munish got, of course, not in trouble. And not only he got one big bag of gold, he got three big bags of gold. Triple bags, because the poet was triple happy, and the poet was jumping up and down, dancing and singing, and he was so happy, and the poet's wife and the kids. Shh. On the way home, he stops by the Sarat. That was the first place. And he wanted to find out, how could it possibly be that he took apart the clothes, and they did not fit the first time. And all he did was sew them back together exactly the same place. Every hole and every thread exactly the same way. And why now did they fit perfectly? The pants fit perfectly and everything fit exactly. Every sleeve was exact. How could it possibly be? Alright. Now I think on fun day we'll have to finish. We don't want to rush it because the other boys are coming in for lunch. And I don't want to just, you know, rush through something. So, Mitzvah Hashem, on fun day, we will finish on fun day. And now the question is, as he's going home, if he sewed it back the same way, if he put everything back together exactly like before, how in the world, the first time it did not fit, not only it didn't fit, it was a terrible fit, and this time, everything fit perfectly. Okay, we have a few boys that want to answer the question. Let's hear it from them instead of me. Why now did it fit?
Because when he made it before, he was like a brick shack. After, when he did it after, he made himself like very low.
Beautiful. You said so well. Does anybody else want to say maybe a little bit different or more? You want to add something? Because actually he said beautifully. Anybody want to explain anything before I say something?
First he was pizza, and after he started doing tuna.
Okay, good. Now, this is a very important thing these boys are saying, and I want you to listen to it. Shh. The first time when Munish sold the clothes, he did it as a big shot. He did it in a way that he was very proud of himself in the wrong way. This went into the clothes to actually make the clothes to not fit. Because the way he was went into the clothes. And then when he took everything apart, and he was crying. Was he doing tshuva? He was doing tshuva. When he sewed it together again, was it the way like before? Or now he was, like Maishi said, he felt very low in front of Hashem. He did it with a completely different feeling. Hashem, please help me. When a person does a thing with a feeling, Hashem, please help me, that's the right way to do it. Not like, look what I'm doing, how good it is, look how proud I am, look how expert and good I am. No. You have to say, Hashem, please help me. It should come out well. This feeling went into the clothes and made the clothes to fit perfectly. And so, Kinnaloch, that is the lesson of the story. Now, I'm going to tell a story after a story. This is not a story inside of a story. It's a story after a story. There was a tzaddik. There was a yid walking down the road. And all of a sudden, this yid, who must have been a behelik yid, he saw Eliyahu HaNavi also on the road. He knew that it was Eliyahu HaNavi, and Eliyahu HaNavi started to walk along with this Yid. And this Yid is wondering, why is Eliyahu HaNavi walking along with me on the road? And Eliyahu is not saying anything. Now, tzaddikim know that if you meet Eliyahu HaNavi on the road, don't start draining the cup. Just watch what he does, or watch everything that he says or does. And as they're walking down the road, maybe I shouldn't say this during lunch, but this is the story, I might as well. The Yid is smelling a very bad smell. Something smells terrible. And the more they're walking on the road, it gets stronger and stronger, the bad smell, until the Yid had to hold his nose. It smelled so horrible. Until finally, they get to the place where the smell is coming from by the side of the road in the field. And unfortunately, over there, don't eat right now because I'm going to tell you what was there, was a dead horse. Well, a dead horse doesn't exactly smell so delicious. I don't know if a living horse smells delicious either, but a dead horse certainly smelled very not good. And the Yid noticed that Eliyahu HaNavi is not holding his nose. Well, he thinks to himself, I guess he's a malach, and he comes to the world, and he doesn't have to smell these things that we smell in the world. He did not hold his nose. Well, they got past that place, and it no longer smelled. So the Yid took his fingers off of his nose, and he could breathe the air. And they're walking down the road. After a while, they see a man coming towards them from far away on the road. The man was dressed up in a very fancy schmancy suit. And the man was walking not like you're supposed to walk in Shulchan Aruch. It even says how to walk in Shulchan Aruch, how a Yid should walk with a nevus, feeling himself low in front of Hashem. There's a certain way you're supposed to walk. This person was walking with his nose up in the air, proud in such a way that, look at me, look how good I am, look how wonderful I am, look how wonderful I am, like a big shot. He was walking a big shot kind of a walk, not a Yiddish walk, but a big shot, Mr. Metzias Balgaiva Dicka walk. Well, I don't want to go show you how a big shot walk, but that's the way he was walking. His nose in the air, walking like this. Look at me over here, look how good I am, look how wonderful I am. This is a big shot walking. Shh. And as they got closer to the man, from far away, the Yid could smell a kind of a perfume. You know, there's perfumes that ladies wear, and there's even some kind of perfumes that men wear. I don't know if a Yid is allowed exactly to wear this, and I don't know if this is a Yid or not in this story, but the fact is he was wearing some kind of a perfume kind of a thing that was very expensive and actually smelled good. Why does a person put on perfume anyway to smell special and good? The closer they got to the man, all of a sudden, Eliyahu HaNavi puts his fingers on his nose. Starts holding his nose. And the closer they got to the man, Eliyahu is going like this. Like it's a terrible smell. And he starts coughing. Until they got past the man, and you couldn't smell the perfume anymore, and Eliyahu HaNavi took his hand away from his nose and started breathing the air. And so the Yid saw that Eliyahu HaNavi was breathing the air. And of course he's wondering, when they came to the dead horse and it stank so terribly, Eliyahu HaNavi wasn't holding his nose. And when they came to this Balgaiva man, Eliyahu HaNavi was holding his nose. And that was the opposite of the Yid. When they came to the dead horse, it stank and the yid was holding his nose. By the minute he wasn't holding his nose, he smelled the perfume, it smelled good. And Eliyahu Hanavi turns to the yid, and he says, let me explain to you what just happened. We came to the dead horse. This horse never did anything wrong. When it was alive, it lived its life as a horse. It worked in the field. It schlepped things. People rode on it. A horse! It ate what it ate, and it did what it did, and it died. And the horse did what Hashem wanted. The horse did what Hashem wanted in the world. And what did the horse think it was? A horse! So when Eliyahu Hanavi, when he said, when I smelled that horse, I didn't smell anything wrong. Because Kinalach, somebody like Eliyahu Hanavi, when he's smelling, is he only smelling Begashmias or something also Baruchmias? Okay, Gashmias means just in the world what you see. But there's something also for your neshama called Ruchmias. Eliyahu Hanavi could even smell Ruchmias. But he says, when we came to the Baal Gaiva and we saw that man, do you know what has the absolutely worst smell in Ruchnius to Hashem? A Baal Gaiva. Like we know now, right before Pesach, matzah is low. Matzah is exactly what we want for Pesach. Matzah. But what about chametz? Is chametz low or it's all puffed up? Chametz is all puffed up. It's exactly the same as a matzah, but it's all puffed up. It's a big shot. Chametz is a big shot. And the worst smell by the Eibishter is the smell of a big shot, Baal Gaiva, Mr. Metzius man. And that's why Eliyahu Hanavi says, I was holding my nose by the big shot. So Kinalach, of course, we could learn out from this story, and the Moonish story, and Pesach, in order to be connected to Hashem in the right way, we have to be low, and not a big metzius, and not a big shot. And of course, you know, the difference between one and the other. Okay, that's the end today of story time. Tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem, a new story. Thank you for behaving so nicely in the lunchroom today. In the time of the Tzemach Tzedek, in Lubavitch, was a teacher of kids, a Malamed. It does not say his name. Let's call him Reb Baruch. So we have a name for him. Reb Baruch was very poor. The tatis of the boys in his class would pay him the money for their boys to learn. Do you know how much money they paid for a half of a year? Now, a half of a year went by. The boys stayed in Lubavitch. Then their tatis came to get them, to take them home. It seems a lot of boys lived out of town. So the tatis came to take their sons home. That's when they paid. They paid all at once for a half of the year. Now how much money do you think it costs for you to be here for a half of the year? How much money do you think your parents pay for you to be here? Let's see if you can guess. In other words, they have to pay for the food, of course the Rebbe's, they have to pay for the lights and the heat, and they have to pay for the building and the Sfarim and all the things you need, the papers, the stencils. How much money do you think it costs for you to be here for half of the year?
$1,000.
$1,000. How much do you think? Anybody else think something else, maybe?
$400.
$400, okay. Who else wants to take a guess? How much do you think it costs for you to be here for a half of a year?
$1,000.
$1,000, okay. These are good answers. Now, in Lubavitch, Do you know how much the Tatis paid Reb Baruch for their sons? Now we're talking about very poor people a long time ago. Okay, let me tell you. 75 cents. 75 cents. Now it says in the story, 75 kopecks. They didn't have cents. But that wasn't even a ruble. So a ruble, I guess, is like a dollar. 75 kopecks is like 75 cents. A half of a year, 75 cents. And the Tatis would pay that much money for Reb Baruch. Do you think Reb Baruch was a rich man making 75 cents for a half of a year for each boy? That wasn't too much money, was it? And the story says, what did Reb Baruch live on for the half of the year until the Tatis paid him? You know what he lived on? Air. Like nothing. He was so poor. Somehow he got some bread and water and some beans, and that's how he lived. Now one time, Reb Baruch saw he needed to buy a few things. Oh no, I have to go buy a few things. I have no money. I need money. Where will I get money? I can't wait a half of the year till I get money. Sometimes a person has to buy something in a store. They reach in their pocket, there's no money. Reb Baruch had no money. He says, I'm going to my Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, to borrow a ruble. Like you go to the Rebbe to borrow a dollar. I'm going to go to my Rebbe to borrow a dollar. Reb Baruch goes to the Tzemach Tzedek. Rebbe, could I please borrow a dollar? A ruble? The Tzemach Tzedek says, Reb Baruch, when will you pay me back? I'll pay you back in a half of a year when I get money from the Tatis, because they'll come and get their boys and take them home. The Tzemach Tzedek says, you'll pay me back in a half of a year in 6 months? That's when you're going to pay me back? Reb Baruch says, yes, Rebbe, I'll pay you back the ruble with Hashem's help in 6 months in a half of a year. And the Tzemach Tzedek opens up his drawer and he takes out a whole ruble. One ruble, it was a coin, a ruble. And he hands it to Reb Baruch. Reb Baruch puts out his hand. And right before the Tzemach Tzedek puts it in his hand, he says, remember, Reb Baruch, remember, you're going to pay me back in a half of a year, in 6 months. Right, Reb Baruch? That's when you're going to pay me back? Reb Baruch says, yes, Rebbe, with Hashem's help, I'll pay you back in 6 months when I get some money from the fathers who pick up their boys. And now the Tzemach Tzedek gives him the ruble and he says, remember, Reb Baruch, you're going to pay me back in a half of a year, in 6 months, right? Right. Okay, Reb Baruch now takes the ruble. Well, he wants to buy a few things. Where will he go to buy a few things? Well, he's going to go over here and over there. Now, he needs now to change the ruble into smaller money. Because the places he's going to go buy stuff, they might not have change for a whole ruble. So he wants to go with a lot of smaller kopecks. Like you take a dollar and you break it up into nickels or dimes. Reb Baruch thought to himself, where should I go to change my ruble into smaller money? Well, I'm going to go to the marketplace. Over there was a marketplace. The Russian peasants brought over there the stuff to sell. And people go over there buying and selling stuff, setting up like little booths or stores out of their wagons. This one has eggs and somebody else has chickens and somebody else is selling fruit and somebody else is selling bags of potatoes. It's a marketplace. And the big Russian farmers and peasants are over there buying and selling, and there's a lot of people shopping. So Reb Baruch goes over to one of the peasants selling eggs. And he says, excuse me, but I have a whole ruble and I need change for the ruble. Do you think you give me change for the ruble? Because he saw there was a lot of money over there. A lot of people were buying eggs. And the peasant says, put the ruble down right here and I'll put the change. And Reb Baruch puts the ruble down, like on a little table kind of thing over there. And the peasant takes change. Enough for a whole ruble, like 100 kopecks or whatever it was. And he puts it down next to the ruble. He says, here's all the change that adds up to a ruble. Now, Reb Baruch expects the goy to take the ruble, and then he'll take the change. So that he gave the ruble, the whole ruble to the goy, and he got the little coins to put in his pocket. So he takes all the coins and he puts in his pocket, and the peasant does not take the ruble. It's just sitting there. And then he gets busy with his egg business, people coming to buy and sell, and he's waiting for the goy to take the ruble. And he says, take the ruble, take the ruble. It's going to fall off into the mud pretty soon. Go away, go away, I'm busy. Don't you see? Leave me alone, leave me alone. Go away. Hey, take this also. This isn't my way. And he takes the ruble and he gives it back to Reb Baruch. That's strange. This peasant would not put that ruble with his other money, and he pushes Reb Baruch away and he makes him take back the ruble. So now Reb Baruch has in one pocket change for a ruble, and in the other pocket he has the ruble. Well, he wanted to give the goy the ruble, but the goy was getting upset every time he came back. That's strange. Well, Reb Baruch now sees a potato seller man selling a lot of potatoes. And he goes over there, he says, look, you know, I could buy a few more things, let me get some more change. And he takes the Tzemach Tzedek's ruble, and he says to the goy who's selling potatoes, do you mind changing this ruble for change? I need smaller money. The guy says, oh, no problem. Put it down on this bag of potatoes, and I'll put down the money next to it that's worth a whole ruble. So the guy counts out 100 kopecks or whatever the ruble was, and he puts it down next to the ruble. And Reb Baruch is waiting for him to take the ruble. But the guy gets busy selling his potatoes, and people come. Reb Baruch says, take the ruble, take the ruble. Because he put the change in his pocket already. And the guy says, go away, leave me alone. Don't you see I'm busy? Go away. And he pushes Reb Baruch away with the ruble. And Reb Baruch doesn't want the ruble just to fall down in the mud, so he puts it back in his pocket. So in one pocket, he's got 200 kopecks change, and in the other pocket, he's got the ruble. That's strange. Why won't he take away my ruble? And now Reb Baruch goes to the chicken man, who's selling chickens and maybe a few turkeys and geese. Or is it gooses? What is it? Gooses or geese? What is it? Okay. The same thing happens. He gets change for the ruble, but the chicken man won't take the ruble. He says, go away. Leave me alone. Don't you see I'm busy? And he pushes him away together with the ruble. So Reb Baruch has 300 kopecks in his pocket. He's clinking along, almost limping because one side is so heavy with money, and in the other pocket he's got the ruble from the Tzemach Tzedek. Nobody would take it. His pants are getting full of money. So Reb Baruch decides, look, I have all this money, I better go give back the Tzemach Tzedek his ruble because nobody's taking it. He goes back to the Tzemach Tzedek. Now this is the same day, a few hours later, and he says, Rebbe, here's the ruble back. Nobody's taking it. Oh, the Tzemach Tzedek says, don't you remember, Reb Baruch? I told you. Remember, Reb Baruch. In 6 months, pay me back the ruble. In a half of a year. Don't you remember I said that, Reb Baruch? Did I say to come back the same day, or I said in 6 months? Rabbi, you told me in 6 months. And the rabbi shook his head. Rabbi Baruch, you brought me back the ruble today. I have to take it away. He took back the ruble. Rabbi Baruch left. And now Rabbi Baruch figured out why the Tzemach Tzedek was so exact in his words over and over. Remember, Rabbi Baruch, pay me back in 6 months. What do you think would have happened if Rabbi Baruch would have held on to that ruble for 6 months, 180 days instead of one day? What do you think might have happened?
Tzemach Tzedek wouldn't take it away.
Yeah, he would have taken it away after 180 days. What do you think might have happened during those 180 days? You want to guess?
He'll get more money.
What would happen?
He'll get more money.
Yeah, he probably would get more money because he saw there was a special bracha to that ruble. Nobody would take it, and he ended up having that ruble back, but at the same time, he always got more money in the other pocket. There was an interesting bracha to that, and the Tzemach Tzedek obviously wanted him to have that bracha. But he gave it back too early, and of course, he only had 300 kopecks in his pants. If he would have held on to it longer, like the Rebbe said, he would have had a lot more money in his pants. So the story is, hold on to brachas as long as you can. And be careful to follow the words of a tzaddik, exactly. When are you really in control of your Yetzer Hara? When do you become a man according to Torah? Which means you can be a boss over your Yetzer Hara. When does that happen? You know?
By your bar mitzvah.
Very good. By your bar mitzvah, since on the day of your bar mitzvah you get your whole nefesh elokis, your heilike, good part of your neshama, your heilikeit, your neshama, your nefesh elokis, it begins coming in. When do, first of all, when you're born, your neshama is burning over your head like a fire, it says in the Zohar. It's like a fire over your head. When does it start going into you? When does your neshama start going into you and not just be over you?
By your bar mitzvah.
No, when does it begin going into you?
By the bris.
By the bris. It starts going into you. Each minute of your life, each hour, each day, the neshama goes more and more into you. And when, finally, does the last part of it go into you and you have the whole thing?
By the bar mitzvah.
Very good, by the bar mitzvah. So by the bar mitzvah, since you have your whole neshama, your whole nefesh elokis, you could be in charge of your Yetzer Hara. You can be in charge of your Yetzer Hara. When do you get your Yetzer Hara? When do you get your Yetzer Hara? Anybody knows? Which day of your life do you get your Yetzer Hara?
When you're born.
The day you are born, you get your whole Yetzer Hara. Of course, it's a question why you get the whole Yetzer Hara the day you're born, and the whole Yetzer Tov by your bar mitzvah. That's the whole thing. As you learn, hopefully, in Torah, and especially in Chassidus.